The Church Media Podcast, episode 171, Engineering with audio legend Bill Thrasher, part one. Let's do it.
This is the Church Media Podcast,
the definitive podcast for helping you create dynamic experiences and build solid media production teams at your church.
Exclusive interviews and church media training from the best minds in ministry and Christian entertainment.
Useful, practical content in the areas of audio, lighting, video, stage design, volunteer culture, and more.
And now, broadcasting from the ministry headquarters of 1230 Media, here's your host, Carl Barnhill.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me this week. For podcast listeners only, I wanted to give you a sweet deal on your next custom media project at 1230 Media. Just give us all your project details at this website, 1230.media. That's the numbers or the letters, 1230.media /quote. That's 1230.media/quote. And mention the podcast in the description box, and we'll give you 10% off your next custom project with us. The whole thing. So if you needed sermon series design, a bumper, trailer, countdown, motions, you name it, we'll give you 10% off your entire next order. Again, that website, 1230.media/quote. Our team will be glad to help you. Again, just mention this offer from the podcast in the description when you fill out that form at 1230.media/quote, and we'll get your project in the works. That's for podcast listeners only. So special treat for you guys this week. All right, through our partnerships with organizations like Seeds Family Worship, Answers in Genesis, Yancey Ministries, Seedbed, Christian Music Artists, and hundreds of churches around the world, our custom content has been used in over a whopping, get this, 65,000 churches worldwide in worship experiences, in vacation Bible schools, student camps, conferences, church services, and more. It's extremely humbling that what we started just over 3 years ago, God has blessed so, so much. We do not take it for granted at all. We have priced our worship and custom media at a price any church can afford. And if you can't, talk to us. We would love to help you and meet your needs any way that we can. We're all about helping churches and ministries transform their worship experiences. And our entire team, we're ministry people. We've been on church staffs. We've been in volunteer roles at church. We know what it means to be in the trenches of ministry. So if you can't afford something, give us a call. Let's see what we can work out. Just give us a call. Here's our number, 910-849-1230. 910-849-1230. We'd love to hear from you. Today on the podcast, we are right in the bullseye of helping you with your worship experience. And I am super pumped to be able to share my interview with a true legend in our industry. Today, we're starting a three-part series with audio pioneer Bill Thrasher. Now, just as I did at the end of last week's show, I want to give you a little bit of Bill's resume. Bill has worked for decades in media and ministry. He has been a consultant, a designer, engineer, instructor, and mentor. His work includes projects with Disney. I'm talking, he is the guy that helped open Epcot Center, put everything together, helped rig it, execute it, everything. This dude was Billy Graham's sound man for dozens of rallies and crusades. He's worked with numerous Christian music artists and churches. He was the principal sound engineer for the Super Bowl. He has helped dozens of churches install their audio equipment. He has mentored dozens of church audio staff and volunteers to help their experiences sound awesome. This man is a rock star in the audio space. If you're an audio staff member or volunteer, a worship leader, a church media director, this is a great three-part series for you. So we'll hit a quick church media tip, and then we'll jump right in to part one of my interview with Bill Thrasher. Here we go.
And now, your church media tip of the week. Useful tips and tricks to help you transform the worship experiences at your church. Here's Carl Barnhill.
Hey guys, here's my church media tip for you this week. What works at other churches may not work at yours. Know what you do and do it well. Don't try to be something that you're not. If you're a more traditional style church, that's fine. Do it well. If you're a band-led church with a concert feel, do it well. Be comfortable in who your church is. Don't add elements to your service flow that don't make sense for your church or your context. Whatever elements you do land on, make sure that you do it well. Don't be afraid to pull something if it's not excellent. Too many times we're worried about being too sensitive to people's feelings when it jeopardizes the whole experience for hundreds of people. I'm not saying don't care. I'm just saying that sometimes there's a balance between disappointing one person and sacrificing the excellence level of your worship experience. So know what you do and do it well.
Get more free coaching for your production team through our blog, podcast, and online resource library. Visit 1230.media/training today. This is an exclusive interview from the Ministry of 1230 Media. Here is church media coach Carl Barnhill.
Today I have the honor and privilege of talking with a legend in tech ministry. My guest today is Bill Thrasher Sr. Bill has worked for decades in media and ministry. He's been a consultant, designer, engineer, instructor, mentor, the list goes on. His work includes projects with Disney, Billy Graham, the Gaithers, Pat Boone, and as the principal sound engineer for the Super Bowl. Mr. Thrasher, if you can hear me through my head cold today, it's an honor and privilege to talk to you today, sir.
Thank you very much. My pleasure to be here. Sounds like a great, interesting crowd to talk to.
Yes, sir. Now, we spoke on the phone a few weeks ago, and I was really struck by the breadth of your work, and I'm just really interested in knowing how you started in audio, in the audio industry and in media. You kind of got started touring with the group Truth and Bill Gaither's group, right? Kind of walk me through the start of your career.
Okay. The earlier part was I was very interested in electronics and things with parts inside of them when I was a kid, and I started taking things apart when I was, 8 years old or something like that. My mom said she thought I had an interest in electronics. They bought me some electronics kits. I even got a little tutoring from a college professor. That was all. I'm in elementary school. The second thing that happened was in elementary school, I found out about music. We had a graded music program. I started with an alto saxophone for a year or two, and then tenor saxophone, and then gave it up and went to guitar. But in all of that, there was electronics and music were both things happening in my life. I got to high school, everything was going fine, and my dad was invited to invest in a new business in Marietta, Georgia. So we went up, and it was a recording studio. Some gentlemen who were singers and gospel musicians had put their money together, and they were going to build a recording studio. Well, we got to tour the place. I got to walk around inside of it. And the next week, after my dad invested, which had nothing to do with me, I showed back up over there and said, I want a job. I don't know exactly what I can do here, but I want to work here. This is the kind of stuff I am interested in, electronics, music, all of this. Can I have a job here? And they said, sure, we got plenty of things you can do. There's odd jobs. Well, that was all fine until the first recording session, and they realized that this is 1970, holy moly, 1970 probably is when this is. The mixing console did not have phantom power. They had these Neumann microphones with no way to turn them on. And I said, well, I've been reading about that in some magazines. There's an electronics parts store over here in Marietta, Georgia. Can we go get some parts? I'll build one. And they sort of laughed and said, sure. They took me over there, and the next day they had working phantom power. So all of a sudden, I'm the 16-year-old kid. Frankly, I'm the only one in the building who knows how to solder or knows anything about technology. These are musicians, great musicians, good musicians, very nice people. But so I spent a year and a half working with those guys. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I did my 10th grade and, well, my 11th grade and 12th grade. And then I went to Georgia Tech. I got accepted at Georgia Tech in the electrical engineering school. And that was sort of the next jump for me was 1 year at Tech. And during that year, my minister of music in church was taking a group of the students, taking us out to go see music things. We went and saw the Norman Luboff Choir. He took us to all kind of different music experiences just to expose us to these things. And one of the groups we went by and saw was a group called Regeneration. As a gentleman by the name of Derek Johnson, and he had this music group. Number one, it was pre-recorded music and live vocals. So it was tracks. This was one of the first groups that ever toured using pre-recorded tracks. We saw that group. We saw a bunch of other different things that year, and he exposed us to all kind of music. Well, a year later, my minister of music invited that group to our church to do a concert, and I got to hang out with them for a week and got to know them, and they found out I was working in a recording studio, and one thing led to another, and suddenly, next year we may need a new sound man. Would you be interested? And I said, sure. And got all the way down to the wire, and then they didn't need me. And I was suddenly sort of, oh dear, what am I going to do? And we were at a thing called Expo 72, I believe is what it was called. It was this huge Christian music festival in Dallas. First time I'd ever flown on a plane. I'm sleeping in someone's home. It says I'm a guest in someone's home. And 3 o'clock in the morning, the phone rings, and the lady wakes me up. And my immediate reaction is, oh, dear, who died? Yeah. Oh, my word, what's wrong? I get the phone, and there's this very odd gentleman on the phone by the name of Roger Breland, who says he's got a group called Truth, and he's looking for a sound engineer. Might I be interested? And again, literally 3 o'clock in the morning, and how he found me in amongst all those people scattered all over the Dallas-Fort Worth area, I still to this day don't understand. But I prayed about it, talked to my mom and dad, and eventually I took the job. That was the second year. I was the second year of Truth. My mixing console was all tubes, rotary knobs. I had three four-input mixers, and they were stacked. So I put the girls on one mixer, the guys on the other second mixer, and then the instruments on the third mixer. And that way I had submasters, because each of the four input mixers had a master. So I dealt with that for a year, and it was fun. They were really some great musician friends to this day, still great, great friends. About halfway through that year, Regeneration called and said, well, the sound man is going to leave this year. We'd still like you to come. And I was just suddenly in a picket in the middle of a mess. Now, do I stay with Truth? Do I go with Regeneration? So I prayed at great length and considered it, and ultimately made the decision to go with Regeneration. So jump to the Nashville airport, where we are coming, all getting together for our first rehearsal camp. And the more interesting thing was I was very nervous about meeting people. I had a list of all the names. They told me there was going to be this many guys and this many girls, but I couldn't get the names to match up. There were names like Gail and Lee. I didn't know if this was a girl or a guy, and I was just nervous. I really wanted to make a good impression. I was trying to do right. So I made a list of the names, and as I met people, I made notes. Lee was the big, giant bass singer. Okay, he's easy to find. Big guy, low bass, easy. I can find all these people. And I met this one young lady that came off the plane from Oregon. Her name was Susan McClain. She was the high soprano. And my note that I wrote that day, which haunts me to this day, she enjoys making me tell the story, is my note for Susan McClain was, wow. She still is a wow. Mm-hmm. I a year later married her, by the way, and we've been married for a long time, since 1974, I believe, 73, I believe. I married the high soprano. We were in the group 3 years together, Regeneration. We went through the bicentennial and all that sort of stuff. And part of that, all 3 years, we did 3 weeks in the winter. It was in January, February. We were at Disney World in Florida. This is when Florida did not have a permanent stage in front of the castle. This was a temporary stage. The first year, I set up my own PA out there, and we did patriotic music. This is all leading up towards the 1976 bicentennial. Disney liked the one that wanted to do these patriotic type music things. So we we worked there for, I think we did 3 or 4 weeks each of those 3 years at Disney. I got to be good friends with a whole bunch of the staff there, especially the head audio guy. We got to be friends and kept up with each other over the years. Regeneration finished. I went to work for Bill Gaither for 2 years, just as they were kind of getting out of, I don't even remember what you call these, they're smaller venues and moving up to, they were moving up into arenas, right, is what they were doing. They were getting out of the small theater type rooms and moving to arenas. So I worked on developing a sound system for them. They were incredibly nice people, still good friends to this day. Did 2 years there, and then I got invited. I was offered a job with a small touring sound company in Kentucky called Mobile Sound. I didn't really know much about it. I'd heard of them. We had used them once or twice on some for things. And they made me a nice offer, so I went out on the road with them, and that's where it wound up. I was out on the road with Pat and Debbie Boone for that first year almost entirely. Debbie had this little hit song called You Light Up My Life, yeah, and we did every state fair, every casino. Oh, my goodness. It was a year of just nuts, and we went everywhere, toured. Pat Boone, her dad, was typically the open act. And then Debbie would come out and do her show. And half the time I mixed monitors, half the time I mixed front of house, depending on what was there and available. So I had now done 8 years of full-time touring between Regeneration, Gaither, and
the Boons.
Truth, Regeneration, Gaither, and Mobile Sound.
Right.
And I was ready to get off the road, and I called the head guy at Disney and said, if a job ever opens up down there, would you please give me a call or at least make me an offer? And it was several months later. We were expecting our second child, and I literally got this once. It was a Sunday afternoon. I got a telephone call from the guy at Disney. From Tom, and said, well, we got a position down here. It's not a great position, but it's a position. If you're interested, you'd need to be here tomorrow morning to interview.
Wow.
And my wife and I just kind of jumped through hoops, and I made the interview the next day, and I got, a week later, I got a job. I was now a studio technician. There's a in the Magic Kingdom, especially in Florida, below the castle, there's an entire network of spaces, roadways. The Magic Kingdom in Florida is on the second floor. There's a whole underground first level where everything is done. There's a recording studio there. My job mostly was dubbing tapes. If you're sitting up in the park and you shoot a little gun and it's supposed to make a beam sound effect, well, what that was a cart machine downstairs. So light beam hit a sensor that turned on a cart player downstairs, which fed the audio back up. You got the bing, you got the ricochet sound. Mm. There were about 100 of those cart machines that had to have their tapes replaced regularly. So basically, for the first several weeks I was there, all I did was I was back in a recording studio, which was very comfortable. I was dubbing tapes, and I was mixing parades. If you did a parade in the Magic Kingdom, you sat down at a Neve, this wonderful Neve mixing console, and you live mixed a parade through the park. Wow. Most of that's become automated to this day. Now it's automated, not so much manual. But those days, it's quite interesting to sit and realize what you're doing and how many people upstairs. You're sitting in this little box. And how many people are upstairs experiencing what's going on? It's really, you think about it, it's quite profound. And 6 months after I got the job there, I got promoted. I became the number one audio guy's assistant. I became audio number two was my title on the radio. And basically, my job was to go deal with live entertainment stuff in the Magic Kingdom. Epcot Center was under construction. There was a resorts area, the Polynesian area. There were two or three resorts that had some live entertainment. So generally, I'm the troubleshooter. There's a problem over at this venue. Go fix it. And generally, it was either when the musicians were changing things and they shouldn't have been, the tech guys were experimenting, whatever. Most of the time, it was foolishness. And just here's how we do it. And I did a lot of training. We brought people in to do training, but we tried to keep the guys. A lot of good friends to this day from Disney. Some of those guys still work there. So, but that was wow. That was. Now, while I'm at Disney, I'm going to church at First Baptist Church in Orlando. I wind up getting put on the building committee. We're building a new building. So I got to participate. We had an acoustical consultant. We had an architect. We had engineers. I got to participate intimately in this whole thing of building a new building, which they turned around and the acoustic consultant offered me a job, which I basically said, thank you, no, for many reasons. But somewhere in that same time frame, I got a call. I had done, back when I was at Mobile Sound, I did one or two, maybe three of Billy Graham Crusades. We brought the sound. We were the sound system provider. And I had kept up with them. They did a crusade in Orlando in 83, and I was there again and got to meet all of them. My wife, in fact, got to sing at the crusade. And we renewed all the acquaintances is what it amounts to.
Yeah.
And a couple of months later, I got this call from Cliff Barrows that they were going to be doing larger stadiums, bigger things, and they were looking to add somebody to the crew. Would I be interested? It'd be two crusades a year. Each one would be roughly 1 week long. Could I do that? So I wound up actually going on staff at First Baptist Church, who gave me the time to go do Billy. And I became part-time at Disney, part-time at the church, and then had my own business doing the Billy Graham Crusades, which turned into, ultimately, a full-time business.
Wow.
My first crusade with them was in 70, oh, I don't even know what year it was, 79, I believe, was the first one. And the last one is 2005, I believe, was the last one we did.
My goodness.
I did about 70 total events with Mr. Graham and his team. And again, unusual people. How their deal for me as a sound engineer, we want you to treat the sound company guys better than they've ever been treated before. And more than once, I had the president of the company come to me and go, my crew is totally freaked out. We're used to going into something like the Academy Awards, and this is a yelling, screaming, fist fight from the day you walk in until the day you're so glad when it's over. And you guys do this incredibly complicated big event, and everybody has fun, and everybody is nice to each other. This is so weird. My crew is so freaked out by it. What's the deal? Why is it this way? And I said, you got to understand, Cliff Barrows has instructed me. I am to treat you, the sound contractor, better than you've ever been treated before.
Wow.
It's not meant to be rude, but you're one of our target market. We want you to hear the message that's being said here. And part of that message is you're accepted here. You're going to be loved here. You're going to be treated well. And you can be part of us if you want to be. And it was quite interesting because their deal was everybody. We want to people, anybody involved, we want them treated better than they've ever been treated before on these type of events. And it was quite a pleasure. Cliff and the team, they were so many wonderful people. But it was, again, as Mr. Graham got older, the microphone had to get closer to his face. Things changed. And that last few years struggled a little bit on what we could and could not do. And there was, everyone knew there was an end coming, and it did, and it was quite wonderful up to that.
Yeah.
And then only recently, he passed away just a few months ago now.
Right.
But they're quite an interesting group of people, to say the least. I basically answered to Cliff Barrows. I shook Mr. Graham's hand, I think, one time, and I got a picture of it. But I really had very little to do with him. But it was Cliff and his team that we dealt with continuously. I'm lucky. I got to do 70 Billy Graham events total over a 25-year period, as well as I wound up back at Disney. I did the opening of Epcot Center. We had a grand dedication opening of Epcot Center. And we had the West Point Glee Club. We had the Florida Symphony Orchestra. And we had a 1,000-piece marching band.
Wow.
Up on the top of this huge building all the way around. And everybody kept saying, this is not going to work. This is horrible. This is no way we can make this work. We can't make these players all play together. Nobody can see the conductor. Some people can see the conductor, some can't. And I went, we can put monitors on the roof of the building, a huge ring of monitors, and feed them basically the the rhythm section. It's what they need to hear. They need to hear the rhythm section so they can keep up with it. And there was this huge argument, it will work, it won't work. I've got a very nice letter now from one of my bosses at Disney saying, Thrasher, you were the crazy one who said you could do it, and you did, and it worked. And it was, in fact, it was quite unusual. But it was, I wasn't trying to do anything unusual. I was just trying to make sense of this. Fine, if all the people can hear the same click or can hear the rhythm, they can play together, and it will work. And it was just a matter of, we had 150 wedge monitors wired together or something silly like that. Multiple amplifiers, obviously, and that type of stuff. But we got through it and managed to do it. And make it look like it was easy.
Wow!
So Disney was an interesting place. It challenged me to understand there's things way beyond how crazy can you get doing things, and if there's enough time and enough money, you can do anything. Now, back to the church world, that's not where most churches live today.
Yeah, and I want to get into that.
That's all right. You go right ahead. It's right. Jump in.
No, you're absolutely fine. It's amazing to hear of all your opportunities and especially the Billy Graham piece, because we see on TV and we see and hear about all these crusades and you gave us just a taste of what happened even down to the tech level that Billy Graham and his team were so intentional about their mission and purpose that it trickled all the way down to the technical team as well. I thought that was amazing.
And very purposeful. They were very conscious of that.
Wow.
For some reason, I don't know if something had happened way early in the past or whatever, but they were very conscious of even the guy that is going to come service the portalets. We want him treated better than he's ever been treated before.
That was awesome.
And where we sat and ate, they had one big eating area. Everybody came and sat in one big pile. No, Billy wasn't there. He was never there. Security had him off somewhere. But you could be sitting next to Cliff Barrows one day and sitting next to just about anybody the next day. It was come be a family for a week or two.
Wow, amazing!
And that experience was quite that message got to so many of those guys.
Amazing.
If any of us who've been involved in a huge Christmas program and how crazy it gets.
Yeah.
Leading up to the thing and trying to make it happen. The Billy Graham people taught me, yes, this can be done if you plan well. Yes, it's going to cost more money. Yes, but you can make it happy and enjoyable, and everybody can walk away and go, that was worth doing.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a true message to us in church world, is that it doesn't have to be, it can be high intensity, and there are times when it gets intense and it can be a little stressful, but it can be enjoyable as well and fun. And you're kind of in charge of creating the culture. So obviously you've worked for decades in church world. I want to kind of get into audio world specifically. What are some of the biggest differences that you've seen? You mentioned like your first audio system was tubes, and I'm sure you've obviously made the move from analog to digital and different boards and things. Kind of walk me through kind of the evolution with you, and has there been any struggles for you over the years? Kind of walk me through those different variations and how the systems have evolved over the years.
I don't think at this point there's been much struggle. I've embraced most of that as they came. For me, they were almost always good things.
Right.
The jump from tubes to transistors and then to solid state integrated circuits, those type things. The move from analog audio to digital audio. Those have all been very good. Yeah, there's learning curves associated with every one of them, but that's all fairly relatively straightforward. A mixing console with a fader that goes up and down functions still today like it did 40 years ago. It basically hasn't changed that much. The more interesting thing to me is it was simplistic. The more complex as we go along in time, the more everything gets more and more complex. And the question becomes is that complexity necessary? Is my big question. Does every input really need a compressor and a parametric EQ? Yes, because there were moments when I was on simple systems, on rotary knob systems, where I wished, I wish I had an EQ that I could just adjust that one mic, and I didn't have it. I had to adjust all the girls' mics. I had one set of tone controls for the girls' men, so I had to compromise. But at the same point, I wish I had that. Today, I have almost too much in front of me, and I go back again to my original recording studio issue. There was very different than live sound. Live sound, you're always fighting feedback, you're always fighting noise. You jump in the recording studio, you're going to record this, but at the technology, I didn't have EQ again. What I had to learn to do is, if I didn't like how the kick drum sound, I went in there and moved the microphone. I changed the microphone. I dampened the kick drum. I worked with the drummer until we got a sound that worked right. Today, it's just so different. Just throw the kick drum up there, throw a mic inside of it. Don't worry, we'll fix it at the console. We have enough EQ and dynamics processing and all this stuff. And I have a reaction to that, because for me, I would rather go back up there and move the microphone in front of on the kick drum. I think it sounds better than trying to overprocess.
Right.
That's my one big thing today, is we've now become this community of how much processing can we throw into a mix, and is it necessary, and are we actually getting better? My sense is we're not. Hmm. We're actually getting worse, because we've lost the fundamentals, and we're trying to replace the fundamentals with higher tech things. And yet those very fundamental things, for me, when you set a guitar amplifier up and put a microphone in front of the loudspeaker, you move that microphone just a half an inch or a quarter inch, you change the sound of that guitar enormously. I would rather go up and do that and find the sweet spot before I touch the EQ. That's my great concern today, is so much of this, well, we're going to put a mic on the amplifier. It's just thrown out there. And then you go to the console and go, well, we'll fix it up here. I think we've lost something somewhere, in that we're over-processing where we shouldn't be. We should be going back and making sure we look at those early techniques and these things that are real core values. Is it the right mic? Is it in the right place? Are you sure? thing. You can't just throw that in there and say, don't worry, Wolf. Yeah, when multi-track audio became a big deal, the deal was, don't worry, we'll fix it in the mix. In live audio, you don't get to fix it in the mix. Everybody has to listen to it as it's done.
Right.
So that's sort of where I am today. Is I think it's terrible. I just got an advertisement yesterday in the mail for a thing in Atlanta. It's a workshop on audio, pro audio, and what it is a plug-in fest. This is a company coming in to show us all their new plug-ins that can plug into Pro Tools and process things differently than what you've already got. And there'll be a half a dozen guys or more that come in there and spend a whole bunch of money buying a whole bunch of plugins. And are you really getting something you need?
Right.
My immediate reaction: yeah, it's the old guy who used tubes. I know I am. But at the same time, if you don't put the mic in the right place, if you don't pick the right mic, put the mic in the right place, You're in my opinion, you're doomed. You cannot undo the problems. If you have problems, you can't undo them electronically. You're better off to be out there. It's harder. Yes, it's much harder work. You don't have to sit at the console and work all day. Yeah, you got to get up off your rear end and walk up there and move the microphone and then go back out front and listen to it again, and maybe do that four or five times, and then go, oh, that sounds so much better. So it's not. I don't think anybody's lazy, but I think they've just been taught, don't worry, processing can fix everything.
Yeah.
And I don't believe it can.
This has been an all-access interview from 1230 Media. For more interviews, training, and exclusive content for your production team, visit 1230.media/training.
Hey guys, I wanted to take a minute to tell you about an ebook I put together called 5 Media Recommendations for Churches with Under 1,000 in Weekly Attendance. After consulting and serving dozens of churches around the country, I noticed many were struggling with similar issues. In this ebook, I offer 5 quick, easy, practical strategies for enhancing worship experiences in any size church. From what high-quality video elements to use in your services, to which presentation software to use, to tips for your worship slides, and more, it's the perfect read for any church media staff or volunteer. It's a pretty quick read, too, and it's really, really practical. 5 media recommendations for churches with under 1,000 in weekly attendance. I promise my next ebook will have a much, much shorter title. You can pick up a copy today for only $5 at 1230.media/books. That's 1230.media/books. To get free resources for your team, check out our blog and podcast network at 1230.media/podcast. We'll get you to both of our podcasts, the Church Media Podcast, which is this one, and the Youth Room Podcast, hosted by Trevor Miller and Daniel Stavanis. They host the Youth Room Podcast, helping student pastors transform the youth or student worship experiences in their church. You can get more from this episode of the Church Media Podcast directly by going to thechurchmediapodcast.com/171. We'll take you to this particular episode directly. Again, that's thechurchmediapodcast.com. Check it out.
On the next Church Media Podcast.
Next week on the show, we continue our 3-part series with audio engineer legend Bill Thrasher. Bill is going to share his journey from engineering the Super Bowl to ministry and some changes to the industry that you'll want to learn about. I love that we can learn from the experience of someone so knowledgeable about creating experiences for people. My interview with Bill Thrasher continues next week. Thank you guys so much for listening. Go out there and create some incredible experiences this weekend. I'll catch you next week.
The Church Media Podcast is a production of the Ministry of 1230 Media and produced by David Michael Hyde. For show notes, archive episodes, and more free resources for your team, visit thechurchmediapodcast.com.